Hello, and welcome to Animal Talk. I'm Jenny Rabinowitz, your host. This 2017 legislative session, we have an opportunity to pass legislation to ban animal killing contests in our state. Events involving killing animals deemed varmints for prizes and sheer spectacle. Today, we will discuss killing contests, what they are, the momentum in New Mexico and elsewhere to banning killing contests, and the goal and challenge to building a humane, non-lethal approach to sharing the planet with other species. We will also discuss the upcoming free screening of a hard-hitting expose by today's guest about killing contests. Entitled Unfair Game, the documentary will be shown in Las Cruces on January 5th, in Albuquerque on January 7th, and in Santa Fe at the Jean Cocteau Theater on January 8th. Our guest, Camila Fox, is founder and executive director of Project Coyote, a national nonprofit organization of scientists, educators, ranchers, and citizen leaders promoting compassionate conservation and coexistence between people and wildlife through education, science, and advocacy. Welcome, Camila, to Animal Talk.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
So, let's get some of the descriptions of the killing contests. You know, how many killing contests are there taking place nationally? And what species tends to bear the brunt of these killing contests?
Sure. So killing contests, first off, what they are is it's the legal killing of species such as coyotes, bobcats, marmots, crows, even wolves in some states, for prizes and other inducements. And so generally the person who kills the most or the largest or even the smallest is awarded some kind of prize. It might be a belt buckle or cash or a rifle. And in our research, we have found that these are legal across the country, with the exception now of California that did prohibit the awarding of prizes and inducements for fur-bearing and non-game mammals in 2014. So, and most people are shocked to learn this, and it's because our state wildlife agencies do not protect these animals, and they are often listed as non-game, so can be killed 24/7. And so with regard to the numbers of contests in the country, we really don't know, and this is because the state wildlife agencies don't monitor them. So often it's a matter of finding out through various means, for us at least, in our research, getting on various lists to see where and when they're taking place. But the more we research, the more we find out that they are quite prevalent, particularly throughout the West, but also in the Northeast as well.
And so are there many people who are participating in these killing contests?
There are a lot more than we ever expected, and I would say that it's a slice and segment of the population. It's certainly not all hunters. There are a lot of hunters who do subsistence hunting to put meat on the table. This is very different. Again, this is gratuitous slaughter for no other purpose other than going out and killing mass number of animals for a prize. So we can get into all the reasons why these really aren't justified, but unfortunately they are, like I said, quite prevalent.
And are these family events? Are children brought to these killing contest events?
Unfortunately, in a lot of states they are, and the hunting age in many states is quite young. We have documented kids as young as 12 years old participating in these contests. And that's a grave concern because the message that it sends, that life is cheap and disposable, is a very scary message to be sending to the next generation.
And then where do these killing contests take place? Is this on private land only?
Unfortunately, it's on public land and private land. Public lands include the Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Forest Service lands, and certainly private lands as well. But that's also been one of the targets of conservationists, the fact that they are unfolding on our public lands. And there actually is a permit process that the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, and the U.S. Forest Service require for any kind of activity considered commercial. And we have successfully argued that because these contests do involve cash and often registration, cash prizes, that they meet those definitions. So we have required we've convinced the BLM and the Forest Service in different regions that indeed the sponsors of these killing contests have to go through a permitting process. And usually what that has meant is that they haven't obtained that necessary permit, and the BLM or Forest Service sends them a letter letting them know that they cannot allow these activities on BLM or Forest Service lands. Now, I say that that's on some Forest Service and BLM lands at different regional offices. One of the issues that we've had to contend with across the country is that different BLM and Forest Service lands have been interpreting that law differently. So that is a legal challenge that a number of conservation groups are working together to try to rectify.
So let's look at the justification, how organizers and participants in animal killing contests justify what they do. Is there a scientific basis to this? How are they justifying it?
Well, I mean, some of them will be quite frank that it's recreational family fun. And, you know, that's at least being honest about how they perceive this kind of killing. In terms of the science, there is absolutely no science to back up these killing contests. And, in fact, in California, we went through a process, the administrative rules process, through our state wildlife agency. We petitioned them on this very issue to close the loopholes that were still allowing coyotes, bobcats, foxes, and other species to be killed through these contests that are also called tournaments and derbies. And the commission came back and asked us to show the science of why these were not legitimate, because agricultural interests like the Farm Bureau, the Cattlemen's Association, argued that they needed these contests to, for example, reduce conflicts between predators and livestock. In addition, some hunting groups argued that killing contests boost ungulate populations, populations of deer and elk and other species that humans hunt for game. So our science advisory board and 50 scientists across the country wrote a scientific letter refuting each of those claims and backing it up with peer-reviewed science. So truly, there is no scientific justification for this. And for that very reason, the Boone and Crockett Club, which is one of the most respected sportsmen's institution established in the late 1800s by Theodore Roosevelt, has stated clearly that killing contests do not meet the definition of sportsmanlike fair chase behavior. And for that reason, they condemn killing contests.
When did coyotes and other species acquire the status as vermin, and what is the implication of that?
Yes, unfortunately, for many states, they have been considered non-game or even nuisance or vermin status pretty much since the establishment of state wildlife agencies. And this goes back to the early 1900s. But even prior to that, our federal government, through an agency called USDA Wildlife Services, then called Animal Damage Control, was literally waging war on coyotes and other predators. Their stated goal was extermination. This is back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So as a country, we have been waging war against predators, against our very native carnivores that we now know scientifically are so important for healthy ecosystems. And I would say that more state wildlife agencies are starting to recognize that slowly but surely, because the science absolutely shows we need to have apex predators on the landscape to have healthy ecosystems. But that said, unfortunately, most state wildlife agencies still classify these animals in a way where they completely have no protections and can be killed in these killing contests.
So ecologically speaking, then, are there any species that are superfluous? Does nature recognize varmints?
Nature, nature balances. And so what that means is if we leave particularly predators alone, they self-regulate. So, for example, coyotes, they or any predator will not exceed the biological carrying capacity of an area. And what that means is they won't exceed the habitat and prey base of that area. But when we start exploiting their populations, particularly for coyotes, when we particularly remove the alpha in a family group, the alphas are the ones that generally are the ones that breed and provision the pups. But when we disrupt that social structure, we can end up with more animals that are breeding, more younger females that are actually breeding at a younger age, and we can actually end up with more coyotes. So, and one only needs to look at the fact that we have, at a state and federal level, been waging war against predators for the last two centuries, particularly coyotes, and we now have more across the country than ever before. So we really should be looking at those bigger pictures of how we have been mismanaging predators, not in accordance with sound science, and at the very minimum, shifting the way that we kill these animals in such heinous events as killing contests.
Okay.
And that's specific to iceberg.
And so we're going to have to take a break here, very brief station break. You are listening to an Animal Talk discussion with Camila Fox, founder and executive director of Project Coyote. We will be right back. Welcome back to Animal Talk. Today we are speaking with Camila Fox, founder and executive director of Project Coyote, and we are talking about killing contests. So if there's no scientific basis that would justify the killing of in this case, coyotes or other animals, species deemed vermin, then why do we do it?
Well, again, unfortunately, this comes back to how states manage or mismanage predators. And there is an assumption that has been sort of part of the rubric of state wildlife agencies that if there is a surplus, a potential surplus of any given species, that we as humans have the right to take them, whether through trapping, hunting, killing contests. And again, that has been those assumptions and that approach to management has been coming under scrutiny and scientific challenge for the last 40 or 50 years, really since the time of Aldous Meury, Leopold, some of these scientists who were really starting to question how we are managing predators. So it's really a matter of the killing contests or derbies are really a reflection of in a symptomatic manifestation of how our state wildlife agencies are truly mismanaging predators and a lot of our wildlife.
So then the killing contests are basically part of a continuum of extirpation-based policies.
Precisely. And there are a number of states that are starting to challenge that, and I will share in California, after our state prohibited the killing of non-game and fur-bearing animals for these prizes and inducements in these killing contests, it then led to an effort that is underway to review the state's predator-related policies, regulations, and statutes. And so we petitioned them on this. Project Coyote and several organizations essentially said, again, that the killing contests are just symptomatic of this larger problem where we have policies and laws and regulations on the books that have been on the books for decades that have not come up to par with the science, because it really has been the last 50 years where we have come to recognize that predators are so important and that the way that we've been mismanaging them is just so out of sync with the science. So right now in California, we are the first state in the country to really do this in-depth review of the state's way of approaching predator management. And we believe that will actually lead to a significant shift away from this management as vermin and animals that need to be killed to one where we recognize predator conservation and stewardship.
So Project Coyote has advocated coexistence as a wildlife management principle and policy. How does coexistence work?
So we have, Project Coyote has two programs that are oriented towards promoting coexistence. One is our Ranching with Wildlife program. Another is our Coyote-Friendly Community program. The Ranching with Wildlife program is oriented towards working with ranchers to look at management, to look at reduction of conflicts between livestock and predators. We have more and more ranchers who are recognizing that the indiscriminate killing that has been going on for, as I mentioned, close to two centuries, and the methods employed that are inherently indiscriminate, from snares to leg hole traps to poisons to aerial gunning, really are so ecologically, ethically, and often economically unjustified. Mm-hmm. And more ranchers are recognizing that having predators on their ranch is actually beneficial, because those very coyotes and bobcats can help control the rodent population. So if they can implement the many non-lethal methods and new innovative non-lethal methods that can effectively reduce those conflicts, they can benefit by having the predators on their farm.
How challenging has it been to change mindsets, and what do you attribute your successes to?
The first question, changing mindsets, I think is one of the most difficult aspects of this work, particularly because we live in a country that, since we stepped foot on this continent, we have viewed predators as a problem, as something that needed to be systematically eradicated. In fact, the first Europeans who colonized the Eastern Seaboard passed bounties on wolves and mountain lions and grizzly bears that once existed on those eastern states. So shifting that mindset to one that recognizes the importance of these predators now is very difficult. Particularly in the ranching community, because there is a deep cultural there are deep cultural attitudes there, and sometimes those are very difficult to shift. That said, I think we have had progress. I think more and more ranchers, like I mentioned, are recognizing that they can coexist with wildlife, that there are benefits to them to doing so, to keeping stable families of predators on their ranch, and essentially teaching those residents that their lamb, their cow, is not the next meal through the implementation of effective non-lethal strategies. Some of those strategies include livestock guard dogs and other guard animals like llamas and burros. And also there are new innovations coming out. There's a particular device called a fox light that came out of Australia. It mimics a flashlight, and it emits bright lights. It's light detected or light activated, and it has been shown to be very effective against various animals across the globe. We're testing it now. Project Coyote is in various counties in California. It's also being tested with wolves in Idaho and Washington. So these are just some of the techniques that are being used now that more and more, even some state wildlife agencies, are embracing to test. And it's very exciting to see that there is interest in this and a willingness to look at new innovations and past ones, such as guard animals that have been used for centuries in other countries, and to recognize that coexistence and that approach can be much more effective and certainly ethically and economically defensible.
So have you been on the legislative floors in other states, as well as California, where bills to ban killing contests in this case have taken place? And what was the nature of the dialogue between legislators?
Well, looking at New Mexico, there have been at least two times in 2013 and 2015 when legislation was introduced to prohibit wildlife killing contests. and David Parsons, who is our science advisory board member who lives in Albuquerque. He served as one of the scientific experts with one of those bills. And in 2015, in fact, the bill to ban these killing contests, specifically coyote killing contests, did pass the Senate. So that was the first time ever, as far as we know, a chamber of a state legislature had passed legislation to prohibit these killing contests. In California, it was done through the administrative rules process through our state Fish and Game Commission, so a different process than legislative process. So, again, New Mexico, first time a bill targeting this had been passed through one chamber. Unfortunately, it did die in the House, but we are hopeful that with legislation that will be introduced this year targeting coyote killing contests, we're hopeful that it will make it through both chambers with public support.
Okay, I want to leave a little time here to talk about your documentary, but just one other question here. Is the failure to vote in favor of banning killing contests necessarily support of killing contests, or do you see other issues and concerns involved?
Well, I certainly think from our experience here in California that issues and concerns were raised about the livestock conflicts, the concern that somehow eliminating killing contests would affect ungulate populations, deer and elk. But again, we have refuted those, and I think if we can get to the voting bodies with that information and they understand it, they will see that eliminating coyote killing contests is not going to affect management of the species. It's simply getting rid of an unjustifiable method of killing.
In your experience here in New Mexico or in other states, how aware is the public of killing contests, and do you see momentum building among the public to ban killing contests?
I will say that my experience is that most people are absolutely shocked to learn that these are legal. They've never heard about it. That includes politicians. And when I go and give talks across the country and I ask people to raise their hands if they're aware of this, very few hands go up. So that, for the conservation community and wildlife advocates, we recognize that was our most formidable challenge, was to raise public awareness. Because truly, we must raise public awareness before we're going to rally and galvanize enough support to pass legislation. Hence, the reason why we produced this film, Unfair Game, is to do just that, to raise public awareness, to expose this cruelty, and to really energize people to go and make their voice heard, contact our legislator, get involved, let their voices be known if they feel that this is not a legitimate way to manage wildlife.
So let's talk about Unfair Game, which comes to New Mexico this week, in Las Cruces on January 5th, Albuquerque on January 7th, and in Santa Fe's John Cocteau Theater on January 8th. How does Unfair Game contribute to the growing discussion about killing contests?
Well, in it, we interview scientists, ranchers, hunters, Native Americans, wildlife advocates about these killing contests. We hear from them why they're not justified scientifically. We hear from a number of ranchers why they believe these are not justified in with regard to mitigating conflicts between livestock and predators. We also hear from some state politicians, Fish and Game commissioners. Ray Powell, who's the former New Mexico Lands Commissioner, is also included in our film. When Powell was the state lands commissioner, he prohibited killing contests on all state preserve lands, which I believe was about 13 million acres of land in New Mexico. So we interview a wide variety of people. We expose what this practice is. We expose the barbarity of it. We also show how we accomplished prohibiting this practice in California, and then we give voice to people who want to get involved to help prohibit the practice in their state.
And will there be a panel discussion in each city following the screening?
Yeah, so in Las Cruces, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, there will be a post-panel discussion. This includes, for Las Cruces, Kevin Bixby, who's the executive director of the Southwest Environmental Center, myself, Dave Parsons, a couple of others. And then in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, myself, Dave Parsons, also we have Ray Powell joining us. We also have Dan Flores, who is the author of Coyote America, a fantastic book that just reached the New York Times bestseller list. He is from Santa Fe. We also have Jessica Johnson with Animal Protection Voters of New Mexico joining on both of those panels.
Sounds like quite an event. Okay, we will have to stop here. Camila, how can people learn more about Project Coyote?
They can go to our site, projectcoyote.org, and we also have information on that homepage about those tree-free screenings and a portal to be able to RSVP for all those tree screenings.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And for listeners interested in learning more about the legislation, we will be discussing it in the coming weeks on this program. I hope you will join us. Thank you for listening today.